The CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phones, BlackBerry, and WebOS phones. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
The opening of today's show contains strong language and is not intended for children.
Did you hear about the Fed?
No. What about the Fed?
They announced another round of the quantitative easing.
What does that mean?
It means they are going to make large asset purchases via PAMO.
What does that mean?
It means they are going to expand their balance sheet and buy treasuries.
What does that mean?
It means they are going to print a ton of money.
So why do they call it the quantitative easing? Why don't they just call it the printing money?
Because the printing money is the last refuge of failed economic empires and banana republics, and the Fed doesn't want to admit this is their only idea.
So why do they want to print the money?
Because they say we have the deflation, and the deflation is very bad.
What is the deflation?
The deflation is when prices of the things we buy go down.
Isn't that good? Doesn't it mean the people can buy more of the stuff?
Yes, but the Fed said this is bad, especially during the recession.
So they think that during the recession, when the people have less money to buy the stuff, it is bad that the prices go down?
Yes, the Fed would rather have the inflation.
So why does the Fed think we have the deflation?
Because the CPI said so.
But aren't the food prices higher than a year ago?
Yes.
Aren't the gas prices higher than a year ago?
Yes.
Aren't the healthcare costs higher than a year ago?
Yes.
Aren't tuition prices higher than a year ago?
Yes.
Aren't the taxes higher than a year ago?
Yes.
Aren't the subway fares higher than a year ago?
Yes.
Aren't the stock prices higher than a year ago?
Yes.
Aren't the bond prices higher than a year ago?
Yes.
So what is deflating right now?
The only thing deflating that I can see is the Fed's credibility.
Did they have a lot of credibility to start with?
No.
Why not?
Because the Fed has been wrong about every major economic development in the past 20 years.
You mean they didn't see the internet stock bubble?
No. In fact, they helped fuel the internet stock bubble.
And they didn't see the housing bubble?
No, in fact, they helped cause the housing bubble.
And they didn't see the subprime crisis?
No, in fact, they told us subprime problems were contained right before the shit hit the fan and the Lehman went bankrupt.
So has the Fed ever been right about anything?
Let me see if I can think of anything. Nope, nothing.
Who runs the Fed?
The Fed is run by the Ben Bernanke.
Does the Ben Bernanke have a lot of business experience?
No, the Ben Bernanke has no business experience.
Does the Ben Bernanke have a lot of policy experience?
No, the Ben Bernanke has no policy experience.
Has the Ben Bernanke ever run in an election?
No, the Ben Bernanke has never run in an election.
So what qualifies him to run the Fed?
I don't know, maybe the fact that he has a nice beard.
But my plumber also has a nice beard, and I would not trust him to play God with the economy.
No, although when you call the plumber to fix something that is broken, they usually fix it, not break it more.
This is true, the plumber is clearly smarter than the Ben Bernanke.
Well, that is why he became a plumber, and not an economist.
How does the Fed execute the quantitative easing?
They print the money, and then they buy the treasury bonds.
Do they buy the treasury bonds from the Treasury Department?
No, they buy the treasury bonds from the Goldman Sachs.
You must be shitting me.
No.
So let me get this straight. If I want to buy the treasury bonds with my money, I can buy them directly from the treasury.
Yes.
And if you want to buy the treasury bonds with your money, you can buy them from the treasury.
Right.
But if the Ben Bernanke wants to buy the treasury bonds using the American people's money, he does not buy them from the treasury, he buys them from the Goldman Sachs?
Exactly.
And does the Goldman Sachs give him a good price?
Of course not, they are the Goldman Sachs. They make their living ripping off the American people.
But how is the Goldman Sachs able to do this?
The Fed announces what it is going to buy, and when it is going to buy, before it does the trade.
So the Goldman Sachs can front-run the Fed, and give them the worst possible price on the treasury bonds?
Yes, exactly.
And the Fed is okay with this blatant theft from the American people?
Of course, otherwise, the Fed would just buy the treasury bonds directly from the Treasury Department.
Who inside the Fed is responsible for the buying of the treasury bonds?
The buying of the treasury bonds is conducted by the New York branch of the Federal Reserve.
And who is in charge of the New York branch?
The head of the New York branch is the William Dudley.
And what did the William Dudley do before running the New York Fed?
Before running the New York Fed, the William Dudley was a partner at the Goldman Sachs.
So the guy in charge of the American people's money when dealing with the Goldman Sachs used to be a partner at the Goldman Sachs?
Yes.
And nobody has a problem with this?
Apparently not.
Is this an episode of The Twilight Zone?
I don't think so.
Are you sure?
Pretty sure.
So what you are telling me is that the Fed thinks prices are going down, when in fact they are going up?
Yep.
And they think during the recession, with the high unemployment, it is better if the things people need to buy cost more money.
Correct. According to the Ben Bernanke, the inflation will create the jobs and improve the housing market.
Has this ever been tried before?
Yes, just last year the Fed tried the quantitative easing with $2 trillion.
Did that create the jobs?
No.
Did it help the housing market?
Not at all.
Did it help anybody at all?
Yes, it helped the Goldman Sachs.
How much of the money are they printing now?
$600 billion.
So even though the first $2 trillion did not create the jobs or improve the housing market, the Fed decided to do another $600 billion anyway?
Yes.
Who put the Ben Bernanke in charge?
The Ben Bernanke was first appointed by the President Bush, then he was reappointed by the President Obama.
But wasn't the President Obama supposed to bring the change?
Yes.
How is putting in charge the same fool, who has been wrong about everything, the change?
Well, under the President Bush, the Ben Bernanke only blew up the American economy. Under the President Obama, he is working on blowing up the entire global economy.
That does not sound like the change we can believe in.
Definitely not.
Who else supports the Ben Bernanke?
Most economists around the world think the quantitative easing is very dangerous.
Does anyone think it is a good idea?
Yes, the people at the Goldman Sachs.
Is this some kind of nightmare?
No, it is very real.
I want to bang my head against the wall.
You should not do that.
Why not?
Because the healthcare is too expensive.
But didn't the President Obama fix that?
No, but that is the subject of a whole other video. Goodbye.
Ready, Steve?
Uh-huh.
Andy?
Yeah!
Bert? Well, all right, fellas. Well, let's go!
You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/CFRN. Over 85,000 titles. Choose from mystery, romance, religion, science, technology, business, New York Times bestsellers, even children's books. You name it, Audible has it. With 85,000 titles to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect audiobook for yourself or to give as a gift, and it's absolutely free. Just point your browser to audibletrial.com/CFRN. That's audibletrial.com/CFRN. And become a part of the audiobook revolution by downloading your free audiobook today. audibletrial.com/CFRN.
Hey, trader, want to get rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done from professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome back to the CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast. This is the daily broadcast of indeterminate length where we discuss all things E-Mini along with some really big ideas on the finer points of trading gold, bonds, crude, sugar, the euro, and even T-bills. Joining us today from our studios in Boston, Mr. Michael Bork. From our trading desk in Chicago, Mr. Burton Schlichter. And from our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. David Williams. Now, to get things started, let's go to our host and founder in Studio A, overlooking South Mountain, America's largest city park. Here's Dwayne.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. Today is Thursday, third day of November, 2011. Quick look at the numbers. The Dow is up 111 points. S&P is up 10. The comp is up by 22. Good afternoon, Michael.
Good afternoon, Dwayne.
Very good to have you back, sir.
Yes, yes. It's good to be back. Good to be back in the saddle again. It's strange being away from everyone.
I know. It's kind of weird, huh? You get a couple days off and it just feels weird. But your voice sounds greatly improved, so you probably, aside from everything else, needed to rest your voice for a couple of days.
That's probably true. No, not a, save myself at least 4 hours of talking.
But, for those of you who stepped in late on the video, I did disclaim before the video started that there would be some strong language not intended for children or socialists. So, you know, I hope no one was offended by that. But, hey, that's the deal. Now, that video, we first played that on this radio program, I'm going to say last spring, Michael, or would it have been last summer?
It
was when they launched QE2.
Right.
Because QE1
was
already
last spring, I think.
Yeah, and so, and I played it, guys, just to hallmark the fact that, based on what the Ben Bernanke said yesterday, there will be a QE3. It's looming large on the horizon. Okay. And I talk about it a little bit on the blog last night, and that video is on the blog, cfrn.net. Anywhere. Oh, gosh, I got to get rid of that spotlight. Hey, why don't the drawing tools work, Michael?
Why don't they?
Yeah.
Like, do you have another window open somewhere or
no,
something like
pen.
That?
Okay, I got the pen, right? You start drawing.
Mm-hmm.
And then it disappears. It's got disappearing ink.
Hmm. Hmm. I don't know.
All right.
I don't know what's going on with that.
Okay.
So
anyway, let me turn
it off.
I was playing with it earlier. I've tried it before. I should call and ask somebody. There's probably a simple thing like you got to hold down your control key while you're drawing or some kind of thing. Anyway, guys, from anywhere on the CFRN website, on any page, on the right-hand side, you'll see a little thing here that says visit our blog. If you click that, guess what? You visit our blog. And here I write a little bit about what's going on in Greece, opportunities that may come out of that, some interesting commentary, something to give some thought to. But that video that I just played, because I know some of you want to share that with a friend or coworker, you can go here and give them our link. And okay, I know it sounds like I'm pimping our site, but well, I am. CFRN.net. All right, I'm going to give everything over to Michael so that he can recap the action this morning from the live trading room. I just want to point one thing out. We don't talk about this type of stuff a lot, but this is so obvious that I think I should just do this. Does anybody know what this is called? This thing up here has a name. If Bert was here, he'd spout it out. Okay, nobody typing. Wait, somebody's typing. Yep, there you go. The winner is, who is that? Greg? Yes, Greg.
Yes, Greg.
Correct. That is an island top. Island tops are, according to who you talk to, a really big deal. Now, not only do we see this in the mini, which is really not where you should go to look at it, but go look at it on the S&P cash, see what it looks like there, but more importantly, go to individual equities, go to big stocks, okay, market drivers like Apple, okay, you're going to see this formation. This was created last Thursday and Friday, okay, big stocks, you're going to see the same island top formation, and maybe later in the show I'll go into why people will tell you that it's a really big deal. obviously, it was a really big deal to the tune of a drop from 1278 all the way down to 1212. So the question would be, okay, is the damage already done? And now we're recovering from that. I think there are those who would argue that this is a little more ominous, okay? And that maybe all the damage isn't done. I hope it is. You know, here was the island reversal. That was the heads up. You get short in here. Oh, I don't know, maybe around 1264. And you take the drop along with the market. This is an intraday chart, too. Okay, this is, does not show Globex. I had to take Globex out. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to see the island top. Okay. All right, so Mike, with that, let me just go ahead and... Well, let me put in a plug for Twitter, okay?
Okay.
I was looking at my Twitter feed on the break between the live trading room and the radio broadcast, and somebody had sent me a tweet about the island top, and I you know, I hadn't even noticed that. So I went to my charts, and boom, lo and behold, there it was. So a lot of people go, what's possible socially redeeming value does Twitter have? Yeah, I don't know that it does have socially redeeming value, but it certainly had some business application value. Okay, I didn't see this when it happened. I just looked at it for the first time this morning because someone whose tweets I follow shared it. So you might want to follow us at CFRN. All right, Michael, take it away.
All righty. I will take it away. I've just grabbed the charts to start with.
Okay.
All right.
And we're back in Michael's office where we have all the cameramen, fancy cameras.
Yes.
Thank you guys for bearing charts with me through my humble videos the last couple of days.
All right. All right now, hopefully we're not going to have any sort of memory issue. All right. I am ready. You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. We will start the recording here in 3, 2, 1. All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Today is Thursday, November 3rd. Thursday, November 3rd. The trading this morning, the trading that I did in the room, I only put on one trade this morning. It was a break-even trade. Dwayne had the charts for a little while because I had a memory issue with my computer. And Dwayne actually put on a couple of trades, and both of them won. I'll show you the one trade that I took, and then I'll show you the trades that Dwayne took. Now, for what it's worth, he ended the morning. Dwayne ended the morning with the trades that he put on when he had the charts in the live trading room. He had plus 7 ticks on the ES and plus 20 ticks or 20 points on the YM. All right, I can't show you that on my DOM because my one trade was a break even. Okay, so I didn't take any trades that made or lost any money this morning. I was setting up my charts when that happened with Dwayne. I actually missed a bunch of trades too, and I'll go over those too. Okay, I had a memory issue and I had to restart everything. So let's get into it right from the beginning, okay? Right here, we had a bubble right here, all right? But we had this area right here, so we could not take the George trade, which was right there, the first pullback. From then, we needed a fresh bubble. We did not get a fresh bubble until over here in this spot right here. All right, we actually shorted right here, right there, we shorted. And we bought it back, all right, over here. All right, after it had made 5 ticks, you know, it made 4 ticks, but usually that's when I move my stop up to break even, but we had waited until it made 5 ticks and moved my stop up to break even. I was thinking if it made 6 ticks, I was going to lock in 1 point profit, but it came back up, stopped us out of break even. That was it, 44.75 was the actual entry on that one. It was 44.75. You can see from there it dropped way down. Some of you might be asking, why didn't we trade right here? Why didn't we have a short trade right here? The reason for that is because we had this double bottom going right here. Right? We had just a little bit of a bubble down here. If I blew the charts up, you'd be able to see it. I'm not going to do it right now because when I run the recorder, it uses up all my resources. But we did have a little bit of a bubble there, which meant we could take this trade if we had a clean pullback down to the BBC, but we did not. All right. Over here, the bubble had already been used on that pullback, so we couldn't use it here. Same bubble issue over here. Over here, we were inside the box. Over here, we had this little area right here, so we couldn't take this trade. We pulled back in, bubble refreshed, and we had this area right here that said we couldn't take this trade, so we ended up staying out. Now, as right in here, I had issues with my charts, issues with my computers altogether, not just my charts. So I was not able to take any trades in here. All right, but we did have a market ran up here like this, and it pulled back down to the BBC right here. Sorry, the market ran up here and it pulled back down to the BBC. We had a fresh bubble here, so this was a good trade. I didn't see it at the time, but that was a valid trade. Now, about that same time, over here, and I believe I have it marked. You know what? I must have lost it when I restarted. All right. Well, about that same time, Dwayne had taken a trade right here. All right. He had taken this first pullback to the BBC right here. After the bullish cross, it was the first pullback to the BBC. Okay. He had taken that and he had gotten 2 points out of that. At the same time, he was actually trading two markets at once. At the same time, he had taken, let me scroll over here, I did mark it over here. Dwayne had taken this pullback right here on the YM, and he got 20 points out of that trade. All right, now these were Dwayne's trades, but they were done in the live trading room. All right. Okay, now as we move forward here a little bit more, we had another pullback right over here with a little bit of a bubble down here. It pulled back. Right here was the entry, and it went on to the profit target. All right. We did not have another opportunity here because we did not get another bubble. The BBC went inside the box here. Right here, we didn't have a trade because of this. And now we were looking for opportunities all the way up here, but we didn't have any. We were hoping we were going to get one right here, but this area right here kept us out of it. And we were happy to be out of that, or not have that opportunity. Over here, this was the break of the elbow, so we didn't have a George trade here because the break of the elbow didn't give us three ticks on the other side before the first pullback. Right here, we had this area right here keeping us out of this short trade. Over here, we didn't have three ticks outside the box. Okay, for the George trade. Up here, we didn't have a fresh bubble. The bubble is what kept us out of that one. Now, right over here, we had no bubble at all. So we didn't have much opportunity this morning. Well, we had, you can see there were a couple of them that we missed. There were two that we missed and one that we got break even on. Both of the ones that we missed won, and the one break even eventually won. Over here on the 10K, this is the one that Dwayne had taken right here. After the bullish cross, the first pullback down to the BBC, he took the long trade. He had forgotten to move to adjust his target and stop after he got one tick a slip. So that's why he only got 7 ticks profit out of this trade. It did go the full 8 ticks, but he only got 7. Okay. After that, we had a bearish cross, and there was no trade in here. What time was that? 11:07. There was no trade in here because the cycle was oversold. And over here, we had a bullish cross with a pullback to the BBC here. And I don't think anybody traded this right in here. If they did, I think it would have worked out. Yeah, that was during the break. So if you did trade it, you did it on your own. The YM, let me just go back to the YM here, because this was the first pullback this morning. The second pullback worked as well. So did the third. Notice on the third, we didn't put in a higher swing. So the pullback after that one would have stopped you out. Then we did put in a higher swing. There was a fourth pullback that would have worked, depending on how much your risk was. But again, it didn't put in a higher swing, and right now it suggests, if I draw a trend line right here, I'll show you guys. There is the trend line, right? And let me just draw one up the bottoms too, because we can right now. So you can see what's happening with the market right now, and you can see that across all the markets right here, across all these charts. All right. That was pretty much it for the morning, guys. Let me flip over here to the 10,000 contract. I think what I was just showing you there, yeah, this was Dwayne's trade right here on the 10,000 contract. What I was just showing you there was on the 2100 tick. Everything that I was just showing you that Dwayne was doing in the room this morning, it was actually the same stuff, but it was on the 10,000 contract. All right. You can see I did actually mark it up. Yeesh. And I just recorded that whole thing. All right. Well, right there was a bullish cross, the pullback down to the BBC. And here was a bullish cross with a pullback to the BBC. I don't think anybody traded that because we didn't like the way it rolled in the middle here. And there was nothing in here. Okay. Sorry about that. I just mixed that whole thing up. But I went through the 2100 treating it like it was a 10K. And it still works out the same. The same trades worked in the same fashion. Okay. All right. Now, on that note, you got 7 ticks here, 20 ticks over here on the 500 contract, and we got 1 break-even trade over here on the 4-tick range. That was our morning. All right. On that, I am going to wrap it up right here. All right. All right. So I showed you everything. I was wondering okay. why I thought Very I had put those mark. I'm done recording, by the way.
Yeah. Now, guys, that
I thought I had put those markers there.
That 2100 tick and that 10,000 contract, some days they sync up almost identically. Depending upon what's happening in the market, price-wise and participation or volume-wise, they can be dramatically different. So just I'm saying this for the benefit of partners who have the charting platform, who have the indicators. Some days you can barely tell them apart, and other days they are vastly different. So just be aware of that. Okay.
And you know what else?
What?
I just realized my audio did not get picked up in that whole recording because of what I did the other night when I tried to record from that video. So I'm going to have to do the whole thing over again anyway.
Well, at least you... Well, I'm sorry that happened, man.
That's all right. No big deal. No big deal. I'll do it all over again in a little while, and I'll get it out there.
The videos that I recorded the last 2 days, I mean, I've been falsely modest. I mean, they weren't any great works of art, but they were... I mean, you can watch them, and you can get an idea, you know. For those of you who use Firefox... There is a Firefox plugin that's free, and it works, although it seems to use an awful lot of memory, and the first day, at the very end of the video, the thing froze up, so the second day, and a problem is that my voice will get ahead of the pointer, or the pointer will get ahead of my voice, but it's because I'm doing a long video, and there's a lot of screen action, but for those of you who use Firefox, and you're just looking for something to record some screenshots. Maybe you want to make a recording of your trade that you've just put on so you can study it later. I mean, you can always use the market replay plugin, but anyway, it's a free Firefox plugin. There's a lot of Firefox plugins. Google Chrome is probably the fastest, sleekest browser out there. They're more third-party developers creating things for Firefox at the moment than they are for Google Chrome. That will probably change at some point in the future. And from what I understand, the latest version of Internet Explorer, finally they got it right. It's not so bad. I haven't used it, but I've heard it's less sucky than all the previous versions of Internet Explorer. So some people may even go back to IE. I never will. It's just a personal thing. I really like Firefox. And I really like Google Chrome, but sometimes it breaks. And you'd think if anybody could get it right, the guys at Google could. Because they actually get paid. The Firefox guys, they don't get paid. Just guys writing code in their bedroom, you know, at the kitchen table. Mozilla.org, for those of you that don't even know, what's a Firefox? Okay. That little windshield you have out onto the world, the internet, there's other windshields. So some people new to computing and all that might not, you know, because your computer comes with Internet Explorer. If you buy a Windows-based PC, if you buy a Mac, of course, it comes with Safari. But there are other options, and you should explore them. And you might find that for some tasks, different browsers work better for you, depending upon, like for me, I found out last night that now while I made that video using the Firefox plugin, when it came time to upload the video, it crashed twice on me. And it clearly said right there on the page, hey, if you use Google Chrome to upload this video, that won't happen. I said, okay, so I fired up my Google Chrome browser, and boom, uploaded it like a dream. So, there you go. Another page from the true story of my life. The world's most, well, the world's fairly interesting man. You seen those commercials? We talked about
it. Yeah, I have.
Hey guys, tonight, partners meeting, 9 p.m. Eastern. If you are a CFRN partner, 9 p.m. Eastern, in your email that you received on Sunday night, the link is in there, okay? In the members area of the website, the link is there, along where we put the weekly trading zones, it's there. I'll still send out emails this afternoon. So if you became a partner since Sunday night, don't worry, you will get an email this afternoon that has the link. I'll only be available tonight an hour. Michael, he's very kind. He sticks around hour and a half, 2 hours sometimes. But I'm going to be on time, do my very best to be on time and get rolling. And I know my hour will probably turn into an hour and 15, especially if you guys ask a question. But if you're not a partner and you want to be in the meeting, then you need to send an email to Michael Tech. Let me spell this for you. T-E-C-H at CFRN.net. If you're on the free trial, your free trial is about to run out, you've made the decision, you want to become a partner, you're ready to get going, you're serious about learning how to trade for a living, send the email to Michael Tech at CFRN.net. He will get the appropriate paperwork over to you, and you'll have plenty of time to get it taken care of before the doors open to the meeting tonight. All right? If you have any questions, call us. Our phone number is on the website. If you have questions regarding your platform, getting that downloaded, give Bert or Leslie a call, toll free, 866-928-3310. Anything else, Michael?
Nope. I think that pretty much covers it. Yeah, the partners meetings, guys, we go over a ton of things in the partners meetings. And you know, we lately have been getting a lot of input, a lot of feedback from the partners about what they're doing to make money using our indicator set, you know, in addition to what we do, what they're doing. And I think it's a great thing for anybody. If you're not a partner and you're sitting on the fence, you know, and now's the time. Jump in, become a partner, and get into those meetings. And it's the hive mentality, right?
Good stuff is going on, and you're invited.
It is.
We're not just another indicator shop. We're a community, okay? And we're developing that. We really began to fully develop this community back in February. And I'm very pleased with the way things are coming along. And I look forward to a very long and bright history for all the CFRN partners. So let's pause here. We'll do a short station identification, tell you who we are. We'll be right back with David Williams from PageTrader.com.
You're listening to CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living. To learn more about who we are, what we do, and how we do it, call toll-free 1-866-928-3310, and we'll send you out a no-obligation information kit absolutely free. 866-928-3310.
Today. Good morning, Dwayne.
David, good morning and welcome to the show.
Thank you, and good morning, Michael.
Good morning, David.
I know you're having problems with your computers, but that's what you get for...
Hey, it is not an HP.
Oh, it's not an HP? Okay.
No, just no. I know you were going to tell me it was.
That stands for Hardly Processing. It's right in the name.
Yeah, it is. It's right there, right in the acronym anyway.
And I do want to say, for anybody who's in the listening audience that has a Hewlett-Packard computer, it's really all right. You don't have to worry about it. We're just making fun of them because they have the worst reliability record of almost any computer. They may have improved that, and I hope they have, because they sure pack a lot of features in for what you get. A lot of RAM, a lot of memory, a lot of this, a lot of that. But, you know, for many, many years, they weren't built very well, and everything that I'm saying about them is on the Internet, you know, on consumer reports and things like that. So if you're going to buy a computer, just, you know, take a little extra time to research what you're going to buy, because I don't know anybody with a Hewlett-Packard that hasn't had enormous trouble with it. It's just, you know, I don't know where they're building them or who's building them.
You want some backstory on that? In the early days of Hewlett-Packard, Steve Wozniak worked for Hewlett-Packard. Hmm. And Steve Jobs and, I'm trying to think of the other guy's name, not the guy that got ousted, but the other guy that then came in, they were trying to draw him away to start Apple Computers. And so he said, well, you know, I got to keep my day job. You know, I got this pretty good gig as an engineer over at HP, and, you know, they're a big company and blah, blah, blah. And so he would not quit HP. He would only come work on the Apple stuff at night. And so they finally drew a line in the sand, and, you know, and they had to give him some kind of consideration. Oh, here's what it was. Here's what it came down to. Steve Wozniak, he never wanted to be a boss. He never wanted to have to tell people what to do. He just wanted to be left alone. He wanted to be an engineer. He just wanted to create stuff, right? And his big fear was that if he left Hewlett-Packard, he would lose that and be forced to wear a suit and become a boss and et cetera. Mm-hmm. So they put it in the agreement. You don't ever have to manage people. You don't ever have to tell people what to do. You can simply be the creative genius. And with that, he said, all right, one last thing. I've got to go show my boss at HP what I've done, what I've created while working for them, and because I just think that's the right thing to do. And so Jobs and the other guy, they're like going, oh, man. But he did. Wozniak went to the guys at HP and said, look, while I've been working for you guys on the side, I've created all of this. And I think that if you guys have, you guys should have first right of refusal. You know, he probably didn't use those words, but that was the spirit of what he was doing. And they looked at it and go, yeah, you know, we just don't see that as being a profitable venture.
While I've been working for you guys, I've created the world's largest tech company. most successful company on the planet.
So that right there is why HP went downhill and Apple's star rose because of that decision made by Wozniak. And when you hear about some of the crap Jobs did, and then you hear about some of the stuff Wozniak did, you got to start rethinking who your heroes are. Now, again, I'm still trapped in 1983. I'm hoping Jobs turns it around. I really am.
It sounds pretty bad, doesn't it?
Yeah. Right now, it's pretty bad. It is. Right now, in 83, it's pretty bad. This guy is still showing up to really important meetings barefoot and sitting cross-legged at the front of the room.
Well, that isn't so bad.
It's just funny. It's not bad.
Okay.
I'm telling you guys.
Well, you're making it sound like it's really bad. Well, showing up to a meeting barefoot is, that's just, you know, that's what computer people do sometimes. Visionaries do that. Jesus was barefoot. He showed up for meetings barefoot, too.
You know, I'm not so sure that... I mean, in 1983, the distance between Charlie Manson and Steve Jobs, it wasn't that big of a gap.
Oh, you're good.
So, anyway, David, the markets moved higher over... Oh, David, you know what? Let me put my screen up. Well, I don't need to put my screen up because Michael might be about to show a trade or something. I showed that island top on the ES, Now, I know that's not the kind of thing you trade off of patterns and whatnot, but...
nothing wrong with them.
There are people... Yeah, no, exactly. There's nothing wrong with it. And it's not even something I noticed. It's something that somebody pointed out on Twitter this morning, and I saw it, and so I went to look for it. And last Thursday and Friday, there was a pretty good island reversal created, or an island top, I'm sorry, created in the S&P and in a lot of large cap stocks. And so the point of their tweet was, you know, this looks pretty ominous to me. And so I went and looked at it and I pointed it out.
Ominous meaning downside?
Yeah.
Going down? Okay.
Yeah. And in fact, if you look at the chart, since last Friday, we did drop, you know, pretty hard. So, was that enough? You know, I'm just, was that enough of a cushion to, okay, did we take out that negative energy from that island top? I don't know.
Do you mind showing me the island top? I mean, and the listeners as well?
Sure.
All right.
Michael, do you want to show it?
I can show it. The island top, it was on an hourly, right?
I had it on an hourly, but you got to show intraday. You can't do Globex. So you might use your sentiment indicator.
I'll use my 7 minute. I'll just flip my.
Let me ask you this: was it on the 31st?
No, it was Thursday and Friday.
It's right
up
here.
There. See those blue bars?
Oh, I see.
Up there in the sky?
I see. Gotcha.
Island top. Yeah.
Yeah. Right there.
Okay.
Now I'm not. I do some part pattern recognition stuff. I mean, some stuff just jumps out at me because I'm aware of it, and I don't know.
Sure.
How powerful this one is supposed to be, but I've heard people say it's like one of the biggies, you know, you know, like a granddaddy kind of thing that you really have to sit up and pay attention to that. So, if anyone in the audience is familiar with that particular pattern, Bert, I bet is, and so Bert, if you can pop in, that would be great. Anyone has any comments on that? I'd love to hear it. Maybe there's a way that technicians measure the size of the island to determine how far the market might drop. Again, that's not how I trade or David trades or Michael trades, but, you know, it doesn't hurt to have the information, have the knowledge.
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, as I understand it, pattern recognition is probably one of the most prevalent ways of looking at the market because we are prone to seeing a pattern in something. And, you know, our brains are good for locating patterns, and so are computers. So there's, you know, there's nothing wrong and probably something very usable about pattern recognition. Elliott Wave is a form of pattern recognition. It happens to be more subjective than most, but these individual patterns, which have very defined setups, can be very good. The thing is you want it to be objective. You don't want to have the guru... have to tell you, well, you know, this is a wave four right here. Well, what makes it a wave four? Many years of experience let me know that. You know, I mean, that stuff that isn't going to fly anymore. People, you know, this stuff can be done objectively. It doesn't require or shouldn't require a you know, complicated, too complex to explain or too complicated to pass on the information type of setup or too subjective. That's really the main thing. There's a way, you know, there's ways to do this. So these little patterns, the island tops, island bottoms, you know, all the different names for them. I used to know some more of the names. I probably still do. Have very definitive setups to them. And as always, even with work that does a completely different type of an approach, it's usually wise to wait for some confirmation that the pattern is being addressed by the market the same way that you are. In other words, that there's further confirmation that a move is underway, especially something that's calling for a really large move. When it's calling for a really big move, chances are there's going to be plenty of move left for you even after confirmation, in many cases anyway. I also want to say, and I've said this a few times already, that the current market is very tricky. This is a market that has spun a lot of the pros around. It's not an easy market to necessarily trade. So just letting people know that I've seen, you know, we talk to quite a few people on a daily and weekly basis, and, you know, it's big volatility, and that's wonderful. But it's actually so big, the volatility can be so big in this, that it actually becomes destructive to people's approaches in trading. So I've been suggesting to people to lighten up if they're big traders and to trade with more confirmation. This is a market that there'll be plenty of room left if you want to wait for confirmation, whatever that confirmation is. It doesn't have to be that half the move is over. It just has to be confirmation that the market is addressing what you are looking at in the way that you think it should. It's confirming by moving and doing certain things. If you wait for too much confirmation, the move will be over. But some confirmation is a really good way to make the odds go in your favor. So consider that. For those who utilize reflected wave, it's worked beautifully throughout this whole period here. The swings have been much larger. We are actually moving up off of a reflected wave daily bottom, as you know. We've talked about this a number of days on the program, that the last important bottom was forecast for November 2nd, and in the S&P it actually came one trading day early, as it did in the euro. Both of them had reflected wave bottoms, and they came one day early. And now the market is starting to confirm with higher prices. So we had a one-week late top that has sold off to a daily bottom. The market is firming up off of that bottom. And normally we would have a multi-day advance. This is the second day up. Even though we had a decent move on the overnight, really did, on the downside. But this is the second day up after the one-day early bottom. Normally, there would be higher prices coming, and the market has not done anything wrong in today's session to, you know, sort of deny that. We're up, we're trading right now 12:45. There are some natural positions for the market today, and I've mentioned this the other day that we're seeing the larger time frames are sort of ruling the market, and some of the shorter term stuff, timing wise. Is taking a little longer to get to their numbers. Let me give you an example of that. In today's session, we're in the 1 hour late right now for, believe it or not, 12:57. Now, 12:57 is about 10 points above where we are now. And in this morning session, when the market first opened up, they tested quite well levels below us, and then they firmed up and closed both the first hour roughly about where they needed to, but the second hour really closed well above earlier levels. So this is effectively, and here's a pattern recognition, it's a breakout. Mm-hmm. Now, the funny thing is about breakouts, you'd think that's an easy thing to talk about and everyone knows what it is, but you know what? People have all kinds of ideas about what a breakout is. So if you're going to use the term breakout like I am, if you were really going to utilize it, you'd want to know very objectively what the hell a breakout is, because it's funny that a lot of people think of breakouts in different ways. That's fine, because it is, you know, everyone views things differently. That's what makes a market. So if you're going to use that particular term in your trading or that pattern in your trading, you have to know the parameters of it so that you're not just trading any old thing that happens. So anyway, we I'm sorry?
Could I just interject? Right there on that middle chart that Michael has up, that's an hourly chart,
yes.
And that is simply the intraday that doesn't show Globex. If you look left, okay, see that red candle right there, the bottom of that candle? Now, by your definition, David, what we're seeing right here on this particular chart, would you call that a breakout?
I need to really look a little closer here because I've reduced your chart to very, very small here. Okay, go ahead. Say that again now. Where?
See that?
Yeah.
In your work,
where
in
your cursor
work,
is.
What
do
I'm
I
asking,
call?
See the low of that candle, and then we had that huge gap down? And now what we've done over here with this white candle and the candles that we're working on right now, these are hourly, we're taking out the low of that close. So that gap, you know, there's a gap fill.
Yeah,
I'm
that's a good example of somebody, this is another version of a breakout.
Yeah, I'm just curious if in your work, if that's something you would see as a breakout or...
Not a reflected wave breakout.
Okay.
That's, you know, I could say yes to that, but and the terminology that I'm using is really revolving around reflected wave. So that's not a, that wouldn't be, but this morning's move up. Thank you for saying that because that's a good example of what we talked about. just a few moments ago, that, you know, people have a lot of different definitions for this stuff, and you really have to understand fully what the parameter is so you can trade it properly and know when you see it. Anyway, so for today's early session, we're in the 1 hour late right now for the market to attempt 57. And so we've seen the market has been taking a little bit longer because it's being ruled by a larger time frame. It's really under the sway of two very large forces, weekly on the downside, daily on the upside, monthly and quarterly on the upside. A lot of stuff is really at work here. So okay. A lot of commingling of forces.
Can I mingle one more thing?
You can.
All right. Our lowest weekly trading zone for the week is 1256/57. Now, we've known since early in the week that we blew out the bottom of our weekly zones. It's a really rare occurrence that we would blow them out this much and then stay outside. Very unusual market. And so what we've been talking about since Tuesday is that on any rally that the markets can put together, watch 56.57 for resistance. Typically, that would be our final level of support on the way down. But now that we've blown them out to the downside, now that we're rallying back up, we have to watch that area as a potential resistance. So I'm saying that, I'm commingling that because we've said it a lot on this show, but you arrive, that 57 you arrived at, you got there, you went up the whole different side of the mountain to get to that number than we did.
Yeah, but that's that 57 to us.
Yeah, but we both arrived, but it's still the same 57. We got there different ways, but it's the same 57. So someone who has the benefit of our levels, plus all the work that you do and the way that you do it, I mean, you have to sit back and go, man, how could I not, you know, watch 57 closely when price gets there and see if it doesn't give me something to work with?
That's right. You're getting these levels from a guy who let somebody borrow his new Porsche to go do laundry. I just want to let you know that that's just so consider where you get the 57 from, right? Just let that play a little bit in there. Yes, it's the same number, but one guy lent his Porsche out so a friend could do laundry, and this is what happened. That sound. That's the sound of a Porsche engine blowing up because you lent it to somebody. That's where that 57 is coming from. This 57 on this side's coming from a guy who's driving a Porsche that still has a motor that operates in it. And the people that are doing laundry, I'm driving by them, waiting. Hi.
You're
so sorry
cruel.
You have to do that laundry there because I do mine at my house, and I don't lend my expensive cars out to people to do that. Okay.
You know,
so
I may not have said yesterday that it was a used Porsche. I said it wasn't new off the showroom floor. That's how I worded it. So
no, that's good.
It had a few miles on it.
That leaves you off the lets you off the hook completely. No, he makes a very good point. In spite of the fact that he lent his Porsche out to somebody to do their laundry and it blew the motor up, and I won't hammer that point, but I just wanted to mention it one more time.
Thanks for not. Yeah, thanks for letting it go.
Yeah, sure. For us, the 57 actually is a spatial relationship number because it belongs to the process known as roadmaps. It's the normal position for the market to run to under the current set of conditions that we have. You know, we've got those conditions here, but we've noticed that the market has been late with these. Because there's much larger forces than merely hourly at work. So let me explain that a little bit too, because the larger the force that's at work, the more leeway, or if you will, slop, so to speak. I hate that term, but you know, it's like a machine that has a little bit of free play in it. It's not quite tightened down. The more larger forces are at work, the shorter term desire of the market, so to speak, the short-term timing of the market. This is not regarding reflected wave. This is roadmaps where we're forecasting specific prices to be due at specific times. That, it can stretch that out a little bit. Whereas when those larger forces are quiet, they're not yet turned on. The faucet hasn't been turned on, so to speak, for those larger forces. Then the smaller thing, the hourly and such, those charts, where these timing and price points are made from, work beautifully, and they work over and over and over again right to the point. B- because there's nothing larger than that sort of pushing them around. In this particular case, we have that quarterly top that did push the market down to a monthly bottom plus a quarterly roadmap bottom. That big, huge advance that we had that went up to a weekly top. You know, you can see there's all kinds of big machines at work here, big, big machines. And this type of forecast for the 57, although it'll be fulfilled on the upside, the fact is that it'll take a little bit more time. It may do it in the 1 hour late here, and that would be fine. That would make it easier for the trade that we're in. We happen to be long right now. But this particular setup, if it does take longer, it's, in our way of looking at things, it's due to the fact that there's large machinery at work in the form of time frames that's pushing the market back and forth here. So
may I ask
it doesn't
what price
mean it won't get,
you're long from?
I'm sorry?
May I ask what price you're long from?
Go ahead and ask.
David, what price are you long from?
Oh, we're long from 1243.75.
Very nice.
Yeah, that was based off of a, well, it's based off of two things. Thank you. It's based off of two things. Number one, it's based off of the fact that we're expecting an attempt at 57. Mm-hmm. It's based on the fact, number two, that there were very easy to read reflected wave bottoms being made in an existing uptrend. This is one of the things that I really love reflected wave for, is to buy pullbacks in existing uptrends or downtrends, sell pullbacks in an existing downtrend. Now, this is a larger than usual trade for us, but because we're stepping into a trade that would normally go to substantially higher prices, we're going to hold for a portion of that as they continue to move up and attempt the higher prices. So what we're doing is very much in some ways what you guys do, is we're blending two separate techniques. One of them is reflected wave, which I just want to mention this, so forgive the sales pitch of this, but one of the people that we had coming had a family incident and is unable to actually show up. So we actually do now have one seat available. If somebody is thinking about it, if somebody has the desire to and wants to come, that seat is available for the November 12th and 13th seminar at the Mirage Hotel in Las Vegas. You can either go to our Master Forecaster course website and sign up for it right now if you'd like to do that, or you can give us a call and we'll tell you any other details that you'd want to know. But this kind of thing can happen. People have to travel. We have people that have traveled from Poland, from Australia, from Germany, you know, all over the world, that take really a lot of trouble to come out here. And sometimes even people that are in the United States, you know, a family matter can come up, something can happen where they just can't make it out. They want to come out, but they just really can't do it. So that freed up a seat. And the way that we do these seminars is we assign a certain number of seats, and the hotel knows about it. They're serving food and other things, so all this stuff has to be pre-planned in advance. So we do have one available seat. So if you have an interest in it, and if you have an interest in turning points, that's the specialty of this. That's what allows you to know when the market's going to turn, and allows you to know what time frame the market is operating on, and a number of other things. It's very, it's a key part of, if you've been listening to what we do, it's a key part of what I do in my trading every single day. I don't use spatial relationship forecasting every single day because it has some complexity to it, and it requires a number of things to occur to get the setups involved. In reflected wave, I use it every day, and I've been using it for inching in on 18 years, 17 years, something like that. So it's a very important part of my trading. Anyway,
this portion of today's programming has been brought to you by the good folks at PimpMySeminar.com.
That's right.
Go ahead, Cole.
And also the people at Audio.com. They have some really great books you can hear. All right. So let's see.
Oh, my goodness. I should go register that name. What else were we going to... I like that, PimpMySeminar.com. Oh.
That's not
Nobody
bad.
Nobody has that. That's not
well,
bad.
Well, I mean, I think it's fair to let people know. There's a
Oh, absolutely.
Some
In fact, give them the web address again, Master Forecaster Course.
Mm-hmm.
.com? Yeah, I'm just saying.
Yeah,
seriously.
Master Forecaster Course.
I'm
no, I know. You're just playing with me. I'd like to be at the seminar. I mean, I think it's so great. I'm going to go. Oh, that's right. I'm teaching it. And then afterwards, when the seminar is over, I will deal with you one-on-one on GoToMeeting. I really actually enjoy teaching. I did it many, many years ago. I'm patient, and I know the subject matter very well, and I know how to get somebody to understand it and be able to use it. And all of the people who've taken the course have virtually unlimited access to me. On any given day, I might be doing two or three of these, sometimes four, talking with people, and if they have any question about a setup or something like that. So I'm really, I really enjoy doing it. It's not a, what is the word? Not burden, but it's not a pain in the butt to me. I actually enjoy teaching. So as opposed to somebody who, you know, just wants to get through it or whatever, I actually enjoy it. And I like seeing people get it. I like the idea that here's a person that doesn't know this thing. Now he knows it. And then now he really gets it. You know, there's a difference between knowing something and really getting it. And when they really get it, it's really a nice feeling. And then they can start to really put together some nice trades.
You never miss an opportunity to take a shot, don't you?
I try not to, but you know.
Because you heard me say earlier that I could only be in the partners meeting for 1 hour tonight, so I'm that guy.
That's right.
Telling all the partners, man, you guys are just a pain in the butt.
No, Dwayne. Actually, in reality, Dwayne. I mean, if the truth be known, Dwayne would be there if he could be. He's got other important things, laundry, dry cleaning, and such. That, you know, these things come up.
And I'm still trying to rebuild the engine in that Porsche. Hey,
right.
One of our guys, Ray, has a question for you. I'm a little offended you would ask him, Ray, and not me, but that's okay. I still love you, bro. Question for David, is the 1257 level shortable?
You know, I am not going to say that it is immediately, and that is a good question. And there's a couple things here. In Dwayne's work, it may be immediately. In our work, I'm not ready to say that it is. There are times when I would say it, and that would be when the number that spatial relationships forecasting is, you know, when a roadmap is saying the market's going to go to a number that also happens to be a square, then I'm all over that. Then I would be very interested in actively and even aggressively perhaps shorting that. In this particular case, it may be shortable, but I can't forecast it like I can forecast 57.
Okay. Okay.
I can only say that, you know, I'm not able to say that I would immediately short it. So, you know, the other thing is that if the market is able to, this is just for the listeners today, and, you know, if this thing works out this way, if it did reach it in the fourth hour, which is 1 hour late normally, remember there's much larger forces at work, so it may actually go further than the 1 hour late. But if it did reach it in the 1 hour late, which is the current hour, we have 30 minutes left, then I would tend to want to short it because we're actually in the ending period of a cycle that is moving up. Mm-hmm. See, if it takes longer than that, even though it may turn, I'm not as comfortable then shorting. If it fits within that window of plus or minus 1 unit of time, in this case, plus 1 unit of time, I'm actually okay. So I sort of take back my initial answer. I would probably be interested in shorting it there. There's a couple of levels of importance up here, so I just want you to know this. First of all, the 57 level is one of them, and then listed in our panel for today is it's not listed in our panel, but the next level up of importance would be 62. It's close by, but far enough away that it's, you know, you wouldn't want to necessarily, you know, sit through that. So I'm just, you know, it's kind of a timing issue more than anything for me. If they got up and did 62 in the fourth hour here while completing 57 and all that stuff, I'd be all over that because that would be a very important culmination. But I have seen over the last several days a number of shorter term roadmap targets get completed, but get completed in a much, much like they're being manhandled, you know, dragged around by a rag doll, like a rag doll, by these larger forces. They will get completed, but they just have taken more time. So that means a bigger force is at work, and we may have to trade it more carefully. I want to say again, please do trade this market carefully and don't let it run with an open position that's going against you without a stop. You know what the limit is and get out because it can really, really go a lot further, and in many cases it will. And then those, you know, it's not necessary for you to take that kind of a loss. It is necessary to take a loss. It's not always, not in every trade, but it is necessary at some point to take losses, and that's part of this, and it shouldn't be a torture for you, you know. But if you let it run, it is a torture, and it can really wreck your day. Some people's lives, it can wreck their lives, depending on how big the, you know, the downside is. So if we're still on the radio, by the way, if we happen to go up, we're almost at a standstill right here. But if we do happen to go up a little bit later and continue mm-hmm. to higher prices, we'll talk about it as it gets up there and see if we can do something with it. But that's the natural position, and so we'll see if they can what they can do with it. And we're going to let them move it back and forth, and we'll take a look at some other markets. Also, let me just take a look at the daily chart on this as well with everybody. I wanted to double check.
Let's say goodbye to Michael because he's going to be taking off here in just a minute. Goodbye, Michael.
See you, Michael.
Goodbye.
Michael, I'll be at the partners meeting tonight as well, but I've got some important TV programs I'll be watching with Dwayne. And when they finish, Dwayne will go back and he'll...
You know, no, Dwayne's always there. He's, you know, the meeting's supposed to be an hour, but we usually run over by an hour. It's sometimes two.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
he usually sticks it out for the duration of at least the first hour and a half. You know,
okay.
Sometimes 2 hours, sometimes more. It depends how, you know, once I get going on it, somebody asks me a question and I just go. And
yeah.
And so I can see why he might not want to be. Just kidding. Just kidding.
No.
It's all knowledge. It's good for everyone. But I will see all the partners. I'll see you there tonight, all the non-partners
right.
who are on the fence. Send me an email at tech@cfrn.net, and I'll tell you what it takes to get in there. Everyone else, we'll see you here next week probably.
Good to have you back.
Or tomorrow. Perhaps tomorrow.
Good to have you back.
Actually, next.
Uh-huh.
Thanks. Thank you. All right.
Let's all right, Michael.
See you later.
See you soon.
Yeah, this thing really kind of lost its momentum here to the upside, it seems, for momentarily anyway.
Maybe yeah, it's very, very quiet. We've talked about this before. I'm just going to mention this. A quiet market is not a bearish market. It often just simply means that the market's very comfortable trading at a particular level. And I don't like, you know, if the market's in an uptrend that's very obvious, I am much more likely to want to buy that, and it's a quiet market, than I am to sell a quiet market in an uptrend. I've been surprised by that. And in the old days, like 3 or 4 weeks ago for me, I used to think that, you know, a quiet market that was going up was starting to show weakness, like this actually is somehow weakness. It's not necessarily, and in most cases, if there's a clear uptrend, it's not weakness. It's just, it's a very comfortable market. It's trading very comfortably at these levels, and whatever cycle it's running on has time left in it to, you know, complete whatever targets, et cetera, on the upside. So don't be lulled into thinking to short the market because it's merely quiet. You better have better reasons than that to be in the market, whether it's long or short, that you understand and you know that you have an edge, because that's the big thing. You have to have an edge in this market. Otherwise, you're just, in many cases, you're just guessing. So
what I would
want
is
probably not the best way.
You know, as we and again, we've been talking about this since Tuesday, I think was when I first tweeted it or put it on the blog, is that if the market can muster some strength and rally higher, that on the first trip up to 56.57, we'll look to sell that area. Doesn't mean I've got a resting sell order sitting there right now, although a person could, but I mean, it might hit it with some force. It might spike it by 2, 3, 5 points. I mean, and then mm-hmm. kind of turn right back around and do the drop. So my suggestion is to anyone who is watching this area, let it get there. And if it just immediately, you know, puts in a V top and runs down 10 points, well, okay, you missed that. Or mm-hmm. as it hits 57, put a sell stop down around, you know, I don't want to get specific, just, you know, 55 somewhere. So in other words, you're catching the momentum on the way back down. If it's going to go up there and hit it and fall, you expect to have a pretty, you know, sizable decline. Or I would think it would move, I don't know, 5-10 points. So there's a couple ways to do it. You might just let it get there and see what happens. It might consolidate for a little while. It might not. It might get there and not do anything. It might be one of those areas where David said where the market is comfortable at that price. So it gets there and just kind of hangs out for a while. So just know that based on David's work and based on our work, that it is definitely a very important area. One of the most important for us, one of the most important over the last 2 years, because I don't remember in the last 2 years. There have been times when price moved outside of our weekly zones and actually closed outside for the week. That's happened on a number of occasions, but I don't recall a week where we moved this far outside of the zones. And the markets are doing a really good job of trying to get back inside of the zones by close of business on Friday. So that's why, another reason I caution, I think the initial reaction will be to the downside off the 56.57. But then I think by close of business tomorrow, price is going to try and get above 57. Now, how that's going to play out, I don't know. And you just have to watch it and be in tune with it when it happens. Could you put on a trade and just walk away and then come back later and see if you got a cookie? Yeah, you can. You know, but that's not how I'm going to do it. So
Trading for Cookies by Dwayne Reeves.
If I trade it,
his latest book.
If I trade it, I'll tweet it. Okay. So we had a 200-point tweet on the YM
last
night.
If you trade it, you'll eat it. If you're trading for cookies, you won't tweet it. You'll eat it. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I'm just being silly.
That was good. That's good, silly. We had a 200-point tweet on the YM on the Dow last night. It was a thing of beauty, Dave. Now, I'll say in the same breath. Well, actually, I just took another breath. But on the ES, we got stopped out on the the short side went like a couple points in our favor and then got stopped out. Mm-hmm. But we had a backup plan that if the market moved in the other direction, to get long, and so the long side of that trade, it was an either or trade. The flip side of it did well, but I just want to say that on the YM that didn't happen. I was just like a couple points off in setting the parameters, and so hopefully anyone that took the ES trade to the short side, you took a reasonable stop, and then when the long side triggered, you participated in that. On the YM, there wasn't an option there in the sense that it never triggered the short side, it only triggered the long side, and went up 200 points. Really nice trade, anyway.
Oh, that's very nice.
Hope somebody got some of it.
Yeah. Let's see. So is there anything else in the S&P? As Dwayne was talking, we've broken out to new recent highs for today, you know, new highs on the day, and they're attempting to get higher there. And this is, for me, this is a spot where right now, this is where I am live in a trade and start to worry. Because we've come, you know, we're starting to inch in on that target. And emotionally, for me, what I'm going through right now is, well, you know, I've got nearly 10 points in this trade. Shouldn't I just book it? And how can I go wrong? Shouldn't I just take that? And it's not like we're really far from the target. We're 5 points away, which is a decent trade unto itself. But it's not like we're really far from it. So just to let you know, I go, you know, I've talked about this before. This is one of the things that I struggle with right here and right now. This little bit of a continuation move here looks good. And I think, oh, God, you know, that's great. And then a part of me, you know, somebody has to take my hand off the little button there to get me to, will somebody do that for me quickly? Just grab my arm there, please. Thank you. Yeah, you guys are listening to me be put into a straitjacket on live radio so that I can hold for the target on my end. I've actually hired people who will put me in a straitjacket and allow me to get to the higher prices that are indicated. But I probably will exit, to be honest with you. I'll probably exit prior to the target being reached. And then we'll just go from there. And then we can all laugh as it goes right through the target to much higher prices. And I've lived that life. And some people who have done very well in the market have made comments. I can't remember. Maybe it was the Rothschilds. Not that I'm saying that I'm a Rothschild, but whatever that would mean. But I think somebody said that he made all his money getting out too early, getting in too late and getting out too early. He had some pithy comment that only a trader would really understand and know and appreciate. And I'm such a trader, and so is everybody that listens to this radio program. We all understand what he meant. And so, you know, it would be nice. It's one of the things that I'm working on. And maybe by simply talking here, it'll distract me enough to try to hold this for longer here.
I'm going to throw a little water on your coals here, because Bob just pointed this out on the YM, on the Dow.
Uh-huh.
That bottom zone, 56.57 on the ES, the equivalent over on the Dow, on our Dow zones, we just hit that bottom, which was 950, 955. Thank you for pointing that out, Bob.
Yeah, thank you for pointing that out. One thing I want to throw in, though, is that each of these markets has their own spatial relationship. That means they're all, it's all in accordance to those three dimensions in that particular market. The Dow may have hit that, and that may complete the move for the Dow, and it may pause and go sideways, but it's not been reached on the S&P, which has its own independent three-dimensionality, and those forces have to be dealt with inside this market. So, yeah, that there's no question that that is an issue, and thanks for trying to get me out of the position early when I was speaking about my ongoing psychological problem of
I'm
doing just that.
I'm just trying to help you take 10 points. That's really nice. You got 10 points, man. Go have a lunch.
You guys are killing me here. I'm trying to you know, this is like a 12-step program for me. Work with me. Don't try to get me out of this silly thing.
All right.
A long time ago, you were in a trade, and I was telling you to hold on and hold on and hold. Do you remember that?
Yes, God.
And that was me before I had the full thing about the three-dimensionality, and that was before the discovery really had happened, but I had little bits and pieces of it. You remember that? We were talking about that.
I remember.
And you said, no, keep holding. It's got to go to this number. You know, that's kind of what we're doing here. And you were in my position. Well, no, I'd really like to take it up. Well, I don't know. You know, and as I recall, I think it did reach the target there, Dwayne. And that, I think, cemented my future on your program. I think
you're talking about 10 more points versus that day we were looking at like two ticks. You had me hold that thing for 45 minutes to get two more ticks.
Not ticks. I think there were points, Dwayne.
Not ticks.
I mean, that's one tick in the S&P. We don't forecast ticks.
Keep telling me it was two ticks.
Like your business partner does. we forecast points. A little difference there. Anyway, I think that day cemented my future on this program. You got off the radio and you thought, you know, that David Williams, I'll tell you what. You know, what a guy. Isn't that interesting? Anyway, so we're waiting to see here. While we're waiting on the S&P, let's take a quick look because there's a couple other things that are worth taking a look at today. The gold market, this is a market that's going up into the November 3rd. Remember we talked about the November 3rd being important for gold, and they stayed above some very important levels that I noted on your program. The main one, I think, was 1683 and maybe slightly lower. I don't exactly remember, but the number that gold wants to go to on the upside is 1782 to 1784. So what gold, this is interesting, what gold is doing on the daily chart, the roadmap is actually daily, but it's almost the identical setup as the S&P is doing on the hourly chart. So gold needs to go somewhat higher, and we have people, including ourselves, but we're longer term. We didn't actually take a new trade based off of this, but for people who are taking independent new trades in the gold market, we're telling them to hold their remaining position because they have gotten out of some for that 1782 to 1784 level. Now, I mentioned to you several weeks ago that when the market bottomed in gold, we're talking about December gold, we had forecast a bottom on the week of September 29th. Anyone with reflective wave knows that date. And we said, although it's not an outright forecast, that the market would tend to want to go up to the high 1700s, because that was this number, 1782 to 1784. It wasn't an outright forecast at that time. It's just a natural level that the market would tend to want to go to. So it's a natural level, plus it's a level that would be due on November 3rd. So we're trading currently at 1764, and we're talking about 1782 to 1784. This may require an overnight position, may require us to go into tomorrow to complete this. So just keep that in mind. Really big forces are at work in all these markets. I mean, look around at the world. Look at all the news. You know, Greece is burning and melting down, and, you know, well, I don't have to tell you everything. I mean, we've got people running in the streets in Oakland, California, you know, tearing, you know, stores down. They're our own people doing this. So there is no good news. It's all bad news. And why I'm bullish on the market by David Williams, because all the bad news that you could possibly throw at a market has been thrown at this market, and we're still going higher. So I am bullish. We were, as you know, bearish from the second quarter on for the remainder of the year, meaning that we don't expect new highs until next year. But I do expect that the market is going to be in a bullish position at least into January or later. That would bring us into or above January or February anyway, into higher prices. And that would bring us up potentially to the 1300s, beyond 1300 on the upside. So just keep that in mind. That's not an outright forecast, but that's my, it's sort of a general outlook. It's not really a roadmap where we're saying we're looking for that. But as a general theme, I'm looking for higher prices. I don't think we're going to have a 300-point, 400-point crash down to lower levels just yet. We have a lot of forces at work that were in the top that occurred, the quarterly top. And then we had ideally, a lot of forces that came to work monthly and quarterly on the bottom that was just put in. So on the monthly, the September bottom. So there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of big forces at work. So some of these things, you're just going to have to wait a little longer for targets and things to be reached. Sometimes you don't have to wait because the market will, you know, these bigger forces have components in them that I'm not tracking. And so those components can stall and hold and pull a market, and then, you know, it ends up doing what it's supposed to do, but it may take a little longer, as I described before. So keep that in mind with gold. We're bullish on that coming into tomorrow, which is Friday. And also I mentioned on gold, and I think this is worth, I will re-mention this, but I just want to say it, that on the weekly chart for gold, there is an important weekly turning point coming up on November 14th. This is the week of November 14th. So keep that in mind. That will be a very important turning point for gold. I am going to be telling my partner, who is much more closely monitoring these markets that we actually have these longer-term positions in, to start pulling more gold off as gold continues to move up here, because we've been in it for quite some time. It hasn't broken the uptrend. Everything is, you know, the market's been beautiful, but I do want to keep getting smaller as we keep going higher, because that's how I like to trade. I like to have my smallest position on when the market's reaching its final target. And what that does is it allows me to be safer as the market goes higher, rather than be heavy front-loaded, so to speak, where a big decline could take back enormous amounts of profits, which some of these declines quite honestly did. But we've been taking stuff off the whole way up. And we sent Dwayne a whole bunch of these, a couple years' worth of these statements, where we're trying to trade this like a trend follower. And that's exactly what I intend to continue to do. And our particular form of doing that is to make sure we do it safely. You know, we don't want to get caught off guard and have there's going to be a $100 down day in gold or more. And that may be the beginning of a much larger decline, et cetera. But for the time being, while we're going up, I like the idea of thinning out on the way up, not running out on the way down, you know, not having to run for the exits and all that stuff. So far, to be honest with you, I think we've traded this whole last 2 years of this move well, considering that we're not really true trend followers. And I've said it before, I'll say it again. I think probably the most amount of money has been made in trend following, in spite of the fact that both Dwayne and I are, you know, very, very interested in and really love the shorter term trading, whether it is, you know, nano type of trading or, in my case, hourly and multi-day trades. They're all, there's all kinds of opportunities in the market on these different timescales. But the really big money is made in holding positions for these big, big runs that don't happen that often. So, you know, that's part of the, you know, the trend following is difficult to do. It's not something that I would necessarily suggest. And we got lucky, in a sense, because we're in a really good trend and we've been able to hold on. But it isn't always the case. We happen to catch a really good one with gold. So let me go on and let's take a quick look at a few of the other markets. The euro, very similar in regard to reflected wave. The euro put in a bottom that came one day early on November 1st. So we're bullish on the euro. That is, if there is a euro. Because if you check in the news, there is some talk about, you know, trying to make the euro go away. I don't know that that's really going to happen, but am I not mistaken about that, Dwayne, or did you read about that?
Well, there's some talk about the euro going away, but I haven't heard so much about that conversation of late as I have that they're just going to boot Greece out of the eurozone.
Okay. Is that like a trading zone?
You know, let me ask you a question. What was the currency in Greece before the euro?
Drachma? I can't remember how it's pronounced. Drachma?
Yeah, I think, was that right, guys out there in the chat room?
Yeah.
Drachma?
Okay. Yeah.
So, I mean, how that would even work? How do you bring back a currency? Do you just start printing it? I mean, the whole... You were probably paying attention when the Eurozone was formed, David, and they... I mean, I was vaguely aware of it, but I wasn't actively trading in the markets.
I wasn't either.
I owned some equities. Oh, you weren't? Well, now, this happened. The Eurozone was... The Euro was created in, what, 2000?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I only started currency trading...
But, I mean, you were involved in trading, and so you were kind of aware of things going on.
Yeah, I did know about the Euro being created. Yeah.
I knew about it being created, but I didn't know much. You know, I just knew there was this thing going on. I kind of knew about it from the biblical perspective, like, oh boy, here comes the one world government. Okay, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. The drachma from 1832 replaced by the euro in 2001. 340 drachs to 1 euro. Was the conversion rate. Thank you, Mark, for
that. If you lose some of those, that currency, it's possible it might drachma on the floor. You just go look for it.
Hey, Ed wants to know.
All right, I'll shut up.
Ed wants to know. I may have misunderstood, but I thought David said earlier this week that November 3rd was an important day, and I thought he said it would be a reversal day. Did I misunderstand? Thanks.
No, he didn't. November 3rd is the actual date for several of these markets. Let me move back over to them. Let's go over them real quick. Or if you want to make your point first and then I'll do it, or however you want to do it. Let me just run it real quick here, Dwayne. I'll get back. First of all, November 2nd was the on-time day for the S&P. November 2nd was the on-time day for the euro. November 3rd is the on-time day for gold. And what other market? There may have been something with crude on November 3rd as well. So I just rounded it off and said, it's just November 3rd plus or minus a day. But in reality, the reflected wave bottom was due on the November 2nd. So in half the markets, it was on the 3rd of the ones that we mentioned, and the other half were on the 2nd. And on the ones that it was on the 2nd, it came one day early on the 1st, which is, that's fine. That's normal in reflected wave for both the euro and the S&P. And that's why the S&P is up now. The S&P is up now because when the weekly top, which came 1 week late, crashed down very quickly, reflected wave was able to detect that movement, that large amount of movement, 80, 90 points, and it could assign a date to it that said that on such and such a date, that movement would tend to end, and then there would be a multi-day bounce. And that's exactly what we've gotten here. And one of the things that helps you, for who was it that just asked that question? Was it Richard or?
That was Ed.
Ed, I'm sorry. Ed, one of the things that will help you to put these dates to better use is to know that there are price levels that are easy to find that we can talk about at some point that would either be associated with that date, like something would be in spatial relationship forecasting, or it's simply an important price that's being tested on that date. Either one is equally good. It really is. Even though you would say, well, I'd rather have a date and a time that's price that's specifically due at that time, it doesn't have to be that way. Important prices are tested during these turns, and if the market's at an important price, then I am very interested in trading that turn. By putting those two pieces together, you can trade these turns with even more confidence, and whether they come on the on-time day or 1 unit late, et cetera. The November 3rd date, though, is specifically due, in this particular case, though I'm talking about gold, it was specifically due for gold, and they're trying to run up right now and complete their target, which would be a price that would be due in this time frame, which is that 1782 to 1784 level. So that's for November 3rd. Had the market been able to close below 1682 prior to November 3rd, we would be then trading to the downside for much lower prices. And they weren't able to close below that. And so that means that the larger force at work, not the daily chart, but something larger than daily, is pushing the market up, and that is weekly. But it's going to push it up into the November 3rd date at 1782 to 1784 or higher. And then we have this date of the 14th, the week of the 14th coming up, which also, plus or minus 1 week, this is also not reflected wave. This is a different method. This is the roadmap. And that date will be important for a larger weekly reversal. So it would be fair to say that really what's driving the gold market is the weekly chart, because we forecast a weekly bottom on the week of September 26th, and we're doing the multi-week advance off that bottom. And I want to remind you that when you go back and take a look at where the market was on September, on the week of September 26th, on the on-time week, it's hard, it would have been, and it was for me. I'm not saying that I had something that somebody else didn't have with regard to this, but it is hard to believe that it's going to be where it is today, isn't it? It's hard to believe that when you're seeing what you see in front of you, which is a down market, a sharp decline, you know, the news is bad, it's hard to believe that you're going to be where you are today, the hell higher. That's a technical term. When you really want to say something's a lot higher, it could be that's very much higher, it's a really lot higher, it's extraordinarily higher, but technically it's the hell higher. So it's hard to believe that. And here we are. So one of the things you get paid for in the market is believing in something that hasn't happened. And you don't want to believe in a fairy tale. You want to believe in something that has some reality to it. Well, if the market has a bottom of weekly size being put in, that's a very important piece of information that the market is going to go higher. And that's exactly what happened here. So remember that you are going to experience the uncertainty and the disbelief that the thing is going to work out, but you have to get used to living in that, here comes one of Dwayne's zone, the zone of not knowing with absolute certainty that the market's going to do what it's supposed to do, which is to go higher. But you get paid for taking a risk based on that. I don't want you to take a risk based on a fantasy. I want you to take a risk based on something that has a real edge in the market. And that's why this technique is important to me, is because it has enough of an edge that it's repeatable on a number, wide range of different markets under a wide range of different volatility and other types of conditions. It's very robust. And so that allows you to have this kind of, these kinds of trade setups occur where we have these important dates, et cetera. So anyway, November 3rd is important, and that'll be an important date for the gold market here as well. And today is November 3rd. So we're going to watch this into tomorrow and maybe take some action on this. Let's see. So in the meantime, we just completed the one, two, three, fourth hour in the S&P today. Mm-hmm. Let me just take one last look at it here. And they're trying to go higher. They're just not quite there yet. So today's high, other than Globex, today's high has been 53. So we're still hanging here. And for those of you who...
hanging like a Chad.
You know, if you want. What's that?
I said hanging like a Chad.
Yeah.
Probably nobody gets that. The hanging Chad.
Maybe, yeah, no, the hanging Chad enough thing. We get it, Dwayne. Yeah.
Okay, all right.
We're right with you there. That was good.
All right, Bob wants to know, since the hour is closing, does that take 12:57 off the table?
No, it doesn't, because if he's asking because it hadn't hit it, no. It doesn't because we were talking earlier about there's much larger forces at work than merely hourly, and those forces can push the chart around a little bit. It'll still end up attempting that number, but I actually still am. Long in this position. Anybody who's a Messenger Pro subscriber knows we're still in this trade looking for higher prices. So no, we're going to let it have a little extra room, because there really are very big machinery at work here in the market, much bigger than hourly, and it can definitely delay a move like this. So okay. That's our story, and we're sticking to it.
All right.
So
what do you think will happen to the balance of world power when that woman finds out her name is really Angela?
Which woman are you talking about now?
I don't know, the German lady, the chancellor, whatever she is. Angela Merkel.
And so if her name...
When she finds out that her name is
Angela, then that means
she's
not
grown
German.
Up all her life being told it was Angela, and then she's at this thing in France right now, this G20 summit. Somebody may let the cat out of the bag and tell her their name's actually Angela, and that could unleash all kinds of geopolitical forces. I mean, it's like, let's face it, until Obama became president, no one, except people who live there perhaps, knew that it was pronounced Pakistan. We all thought it was Pakistan. Right?
No, but it's really not. No, that's right. That's very good.
Yeah. So.
That's very good. I just also, you mentioned Obama, so may I just say a few things? He is going around touting that things are better than they were several years ago.
Okay.
That's delusional. Okay. That's mental patient qualities. Things are not better than they were several years ago. And then the final old saw, and of course every politician would use this, well, things are better than they would have been if I wouldn't have done all those things that failed. Failed policies, failed this, failed that. And as to transparency, when he was recently answering questions, you know, I just hate BS, honestly. It doesn't matter who does it, the right or the left. This whole thing with Solyndra, $550 million loan, and, you know, they're trying to get to the bottom of it. But they have to now subpoena the White House because the White House, who wants to be, he ran on transparency, and that's no small thing. He really made a big deal about that. Mm-hmm. They don't want to release all the documents. They feel like they've released enough. So now Congress has to go in and have a whole vote to subpoena documents because the White House doesn't want to release all of the documents. They want to release the ones they want to release. So there's your transparency there. And then while discussing Solyndra in front of national TV, the president declined to mention that there's a number of other companies who have gone bankrupt as well that we've given money to. Mm-hmm. He didn't bring that up. You know, all of that is just BS. That's just, you know, this again, it goes back to that thing, whether it's him or whether it's the right, somebody that doesn't know how to take a hit. He's never going to get past. He can't do any better than this because he'll never allow himself to be touched by reality. And reality is the only thing that can actually change your behavior. If you're going to deny and cover up and trick and fool yourself and others that things aren't the way they are, you're not going to be the person that implements something unless it's by sheer accident and luck that actually appears to have made the changes and made everything better. He's never wrong. He's never had one misstep. He's never done anything wrong. It's always somebody else's fault. I don't want that guy being president, whoever that guy is, whether he's on the right or the left, black or white, Indian or whatever. Somebody needs to, there really needs, that's why that saying, the buck stops here, because this stuff has been going on. That's an old saying. I mean, there's people listening to this program that don't even know that saying. But that saying is out there because the old true, the old fact of people wanting to deny that they're at fault or having done something wrong or take some responsibility for their own actions, that's been around forever. That's been around, you know, long before politics.
Talking about wasting money, to take this off Capitol Hill for a moment and put it on Baseline Road here in Phoenix, Arizona. Can we do that, David?
Is that home to the world's largest amusement park?
It is.
Okay.
Probably anyone listening to this show, no matter where you live, you've heard about the Baseline Killer, the guy here in Phoenix that was like a sniper shooting people, doing whatever. Now, what he did was huge and enormous and horrible, and it's a great tragedy, and no one doubts that. But I was watching the news last night, and this dawned on me, okay, there's been a trial going on for, I don't know, the last year. And when you have a trial, those things are very expensive, right? Defense attorneys, and I mean for the taxpayers of this state, from the judge to the court reporter to all the attorneys to the guards that stand around to the people that come in and sweep up the courtroom when everybody goes out at the end of the day. I mean, that trial is costing millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars in a county, in a state that is on the verge of, like, going under, right? I mean, mm-hmm. It's so bad we had to sell our parking meters to some outfit in Chicago. We had a bailout. All right. So this guy, the Baseline Killer, as they've named him, he's already serving a 468-year sentence for these two girls that he raped. Okay, you with me?
Yeah,
already serving 467 years. Do we really need to spend $2, $3, $5, $10 million to put this trial on for the past year, which is now only finally, or year and a half, and it's now only finally moving into the sentencing stage? I mean, I understand that families need closure and all that kind of thing, and I know that would be the argument, okay? And I'm sympathetic to that. But in a county, in a state that's on the verge of going under, can we really afford that? I mean,
you may not be able to, and I would throw this in, that of one of the many things that you could say that we do need to spend money on, and I don't deny that if you don't have the money, you might not be able to spend it, but I just want to say this. The justice system, the fact that we're a system of laws, we're a country of laws, the fact that people are held accountable, the fact that there is jurisprudence, that there are conclusions that are come to, they land in the books, that all that stuff happens, those wheels have to keep on moving. I'm just making this argument because that's one of the main big backbones that makes society work, that we do, in fact, work as a nation of laws in the majority of cases. Obviously, we have some laws like the immigration laws and others that are, you know, it's very questionable about whether or not they mean anything. But
well, I mean,
that's one of the reasons
good
a person
behavior,
could make
he'll
the argument.
Get out when he's 312. So, I mean,
that's right.
It just it seems almost absurd and ridiculous.
Yeah, because he's already in jail. He's already, you know,
and he
but
has
the
no
people,
chance of ever being set free.
Yeah, no, but it's not. It's really not necessarily about him and his sentence now. It's about the law acknowledging that he is the responsible party for these people's deaths, and it's not just for the parents. It's for the law. That's what our whole system does. I mean, this is one argument that a person could make. And I actually am kind of, you know, I understand the money side of it as well, I think. But the idea that the system is going to continue, that's a
right.
backbone of our system, is the whole jurisprudence
yeah,
thing.
Yeah,
that
Bob says this country says he has the right to the trial, you know.
And he does have, and that's part of it, the constitutionality of it and all that. I'd rather see us, listen, I'd rather see us doing that and accomplishing that than sending $500 million to energy companies, even if it's in the best of intentions. I mean, realize people were in an uproar over giving $63 billion to GM, a long-standing company with a history of a million years, and that was a big thing. This is $550 million that was given to this company. It's not $63 billion. But it still is a heck of a lot of money. Mm-hmm. It's a ton of money that they just gave away, and they gave it away to a bunch of other companies as well. And there's a lot of questions about if there was, you know, impropriety with regard to, you know, people who are friends of the president or brother-in-laws or whatever. Who cares? The fact is that that money, if we could hold off and learn how to not spend that money foolishly. And again, you know, there's kind of an immaturity to all this. I just want to mention this. I get the GM thing. Even though I don't agree with it, I get the GM thing. What I don't get is that this guy is so ignorant of economics that he thinks he can go around and just seed capital money and start a new industry. It just doesn't work that way. It doesn't. I've told you on the show before, you can't stop a crash and you can't even start one of your own accord with money. And these people are going around thinking they're going to start the green. He wants to be known as the green energy guy. It doesn't work that way, and it hasn't worked that way. The companies that you're trying to get started, the system has to start those companies. People have to see a real reason for being there, and investors have to come in, and many of them will fail on their own, and then at some point it'll be a real industry. But to go around just seed capitalizing various companies, many of which have gone bankrupt now, to more than $1 billion, is just ludicrous, and it shows an almost, you know, junior high school level of understanding of how all this stuff works. It doesn't work that way. The computer industry couldn't have been seed capitalized by the government. If they did, they would have had to do it many, many times over until it finally took hold.
And
when there really was a real economic reason for it to be there, people really understood it, people really accepted it. You could have started seed capitalizing this way back. You know, Carter could have been, I want to be the new computer, you know,
we'd
president.
Still be
he
using
could have
punch
seed
cards.
Capitalized. What's that?
And we'd still be using punch cards.
Right. And you could have put all that money in there, and it would have started a few companies. They would have gone bankrupt. And finally, when the whole system agreed that these companies need to be there, then it would work. These guys are running around just, just pissing away money, just hand left and right, for even if it's in the best intentions, it's so ignorant. It really is. It's just complete ignorance of how the real deal works, how real economies work. And I'm not an economist, but I mean, it's obvious it doesn't work by you going in and starting an industry by handing money over to people and agreeing to give them loans and stuff. That's venture capital. That's what that is. And venture capitalists have like an 80 to 20 loss rate. 8 out of the 10 companies that they're going to fund. I happen to be very close friends to somebody who's a huge venture capitalist. And 8 out of the 10 companies on a good year go bad. 8 out of 10. That's what the government's doing. They're basically performing venture capital. And they're doing it with taxpayer dollars. And so we end up paying for it, and then we're all going to have to pay our quote-unquote fair share for their experiment. So, you know, I wish he would stop doing that, and that's just another form of government waste that, you know, we've talked about on the program. We don't have to get into, but, you know, we need a better and more intelligent, the conditions we're in demand better intelligence than what we've got going on in the White House right now.
Brad,
that's just it, whoever it is.
Brad has a question. He wants to know if you, David Williams, have selected who you would like to see as the GOP candidate to run against President Obama. Would it be Mr. Perry?
It would be
Mr.
you,
Dwayne.
Romney,
or Mr. Cain? I've taken my head out of the ring.
Let me say a couple things. I'm not sure, but I'll tell you this.
Okay.
I don't have anything bad that I can say really about Mitt Romney. I know his plan is a little more complicated than other people's plans for taxes. I'll tell you this, rather than name the candidate, let me say what it is. I mean, somebody's asking. Rather than name a candidate, because I don't specifically have one just yet that I'm fully happy with, but I don't have to be fully happy to vote for the guy. But I do want to say this. I'm for limited government. I'm for more self-responsibility on people. I'm for compassion. I'm for having programs that help people who, for whatever reason, cannot help themselves, mentally ill, homeless by strange conditions, but they're trying to get out of it. I'm for being reasonable with taxes, you know, taxing people a reasonable amount because the government has to exist. I like the idea of a consumption tax. I like the idea of a flat tax. I think the idea that we're spending $500 billion on the IRS each year is enormous, and that has to be done away with. I think the idea that you could be audited and that you didn't keep records properly and therefore could be made broke, as an example, if the IRS came in and wanted to say, well, you know, since you can't prove that these expenses, whatever it is, in your tax records were such and such, we're going to assume, therefore, since you can't prove otherwise, and therefore you owe us, you know, this amount of money, and then there's these taxes and interest and penalties and everything, and you could literally end up being wiped out because you didn't keep records. And a flat tax system doesn't require you necessarily, right, to keep records and to be able to prove for 5 or 7 years, whatever it is, that these people can come in and, you know, cause you just turn your life upside down. But every time you file a return, that's another 5 or 7 year period that you are basically signing up for you to be hurt by them if you don't keep all these records. And I think that's an unusual pressure to put on people. There's always going to be people who want to game the system, but it's going to be very difficult to game the system when it's a flat tax. You know, the gaming is going on now when you have all these loopholes and this, that, and the other, right? The flat tax or a consumption tax or something like that. I like that. I'm not for having 1 million entitlement programs and new ones developed every day. I'm not for having businesses be under undue regulations that increase exponentially so that they export all of their manufacturing to other countries. I want to be reasonable. I want the government to be reasonable. I want it to cover the part that it's supposed to cover and stay out of the business of all the things that it's gotten into. The government can live on the money. It's supposed to live within its means. We're supposed to live within our means. And if you can't live within your means, there's something wrong and you need to be corrected. But so does the government. So I like a reasonable government, and I like to see those changes. You know, whoever could make those changes or something even that resembles those changes, I'd love to see that. I'd also like to see, honestly, the internet stay untaxed for some period of time longer, because that's something that nobody has talked about because they know they'd get a very, very bad backlash. And it's been wonderful that it hasn't been taxed. It doesn't need to be taxed yet. As soon as the government cleans up all of its waste, which is just triple incredible if you knew how bad it is. I mean, we just found out about the cylinders. You know, there's millions of other things that go on there. The money just gets wasted. Once that waste is cleaned up even marginally, then you can talk about, you know, then if you can't run the government properly, we can talk about some new taxes. But at this point in time, that's where I am. I believe in many democratic principles, but I also believe in these principles that I mentioned. You know, leave people alone, get out of the way, make taxes reasonable, smaller government, more self-responsibility for people, stop, you know, allowing people to get away with, you know, being on programs that they're not supposed to be on, and, you know, all the things. It just goes on and on and on.
David,
that's where I am. And so if a candidate has some of those qualities, I'm interested in those qualities. You know, I'm also interested in getting out of this position. I want to tell you something. You saw this
job.
Is great.
This was beautiful.
I finally did a good job.
Good job.
With a position here, and we just messaged to get out at 12:55:75. So there we go. See, you distract me. You distract me enough, and I can do some pretty good trading there.
That was nice.
That's why I got this here company mm-hmm. just to keep me distracted. Anyway, so that's if a person can do that.
Now we get to see in real time how this thing handles 57.
Yeah, absolutely. Here we are. I was just going to say, so whatever candidate has some of those, you know, can bring that up to the table, I'd be interested in that. And I know that there's a few of them that do have that, and I know Herman Cain has some, you know, issues with his past and all that. We'll see how that works out. Men having power and going after women, gosh, what a new story. But, you know, that's what happens in these things. If you're going to go for president of the United States, you're going to be tested by fire. And that's part of the process. So he's going through his part of the process. They're going to find it. They're going to dig it up on you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, you know, these people that want to be in, yeah, I guess, I don't know. I've said it before. I guess I'm just, you know, different people are cut from different cloth and have different motivations.
Uh-huh.
I'm just too private an individual to live such a public life. No amount of money. I mean, I don't have, I'm not power hungry, you know. And greed, it's not, you know, there isn't enough money. I don't care how much money you said you would give me to live my life under a microscope in front of the public for X number of years. I just, maybe at a younger age, if I'd have thought about it differently, I mean, you know, getting a gig as a senator for like 2 years and then having retirement and health care for the rest of your life, I could have shot at that, maybe. But at this point in my life, you know, I don't know. Maybe that's how I get health care. I'll become the next senator from Arizona.
You know, I do want to say one last thing. Also, this is a story from the Bible. I don't remember what it's called. You would know it, Dwayne, better than me. But and somebody correct me if I say it wrong. But there's a story in the Bible where either a farmer or a vineyard keeper, somebody hires some men mm-hmm. for work.
Right.
And one of the men complains that, if I remember correctly, that another man is being paid more or differently than he is.
Here you go. Let me run it down for you. What happens is the guy that owns the vineyard, he hires some guys in the morning. He says, if you guys go work in my vineyard all day, I'll pay you X. Okay? And then mm-hmm. about middle of the day, there's some people standing around not doing anything. He goes, what's up? And they go like, well, we need some work. And he goes, all right, well, I'm going to pay you X to go work in my vineyard. And then, as it was getting towards night, there's only about an hour of daylight left, he hires some other guys and says, go work in my vineyard and I'll pay you X. And so they did. And then when everybody lined up to get paid, they all got paid the same thing. Now, the guys that went to work in the morning, they were willing to work for X. But they became very bothered because the guys who only had to work half a day or an hour got paid just as much as they got paid. They were very upset by that. So that's the parable.
Right.
Now you go from
that's
there.
The parable. I was just going to point out that Jesus or the, not Jesus' response or whoever's response, but it's a high-level response was, you agreed, Mr. Morning Man, to mm-hmm. be paid this amount.
The vineyard owner.
And I paid you that, man. The vineyard owner, you agreed to be paid this amount. What difference does it make what I do with this fellow over here?
Exactly.
You agreed to work for this amount at that time. And I remember thinking to myself that particular parable is very much like the one of the solutions to one of the big problems that we have is that everybody looks at what everybody else is getting and doing and screams bloody murder if anybody gets anything that's a little more or less of them. This is some of the far left's complaints is that everyone isn't equal. Just by you being successful, you've created this horrible imbalance that you now have to correct, or we have to come in and correct it by taking stuff from you because you've created an imbalance by being successful. Everyone's looking at everyone else, but the man agreed to work for that pay. But now that he's got that pay and he sees someone else came in later in the day and, you know, got the same amount of pay, yeah, it's human nature. You know, you could make the argument a human being's going to say, hey, you know, I've worked 8 hours more or 4 hours more than this guy, and you paid him the same amount. But I think there's something very powerful in that the man did agree to be paid that amount for that amount of time. Don't worry about what I did with this fellow over here or this fellow over here. That's what you agreed to be paid.
Yeah,
and you've been paid that.
And this really goes
deep. That's self-responsibility. That's that self-responsibility thing. Where is the self-responsibility if you agreed to be paid that amount? Why is it now not your self-responsibility to accept that payment? Why is it your sudden right to demand something, some other deal that you had nothing to do with? Go ahead.
It goes to the very nature of mankind or who we are, you know.
Yeah.
Our fallible nature. In fact, the guy that got hired in the morning for X to work in the vineyard, man, he was happy to get that job. He was like, man, I've been looking for work. I got work, you know.
Right,
it was,
right. There he is in the morning.
Awesome,
now in the night,
man.
He's suing
whistling.
You.
He's whistling as he goes off to work. He's very, very happy until he finds out that somebody else was able to work fewer hours and mm-hmm. got paid the same as he did. Now suddenly something inside of him sours and he goes, wait a minute. That's not fair. And as I wrote in the blog last night, the only fair I'm familiar with in this world is the state fair. Life ain't fair. Period.
Well, I'm not sure that it isn't fair. I think
fair
pay when he said he would work for that amount of money. But because he wants to look around and check into everybody else's business, and he wants to say now that's unfair, you know. And there it is. There's the same problem. Look at how long humanity's been serving that problem.
Do you
and
think
it
life's
was back
fair, David?
In biblical days.
Do you think life's fair?
It's a deeper question than a yes or no answer.
Okay.
But
all right.
I don't know that it's. I don't even know that it's a correct question.
There are things
in my world
right
that
answer.
You could say.
Mm, okay.
Listen. What's that?
You can never get the right answer by asking the wrong question.
That's right. And I think there is such a thing as a wrong question. It's based on a wrong premise, and therefore the answer is not really servicing the real question. I'm not sure. I would have to think about that a little bit, and I just can't think on my feet well enough to answer that right now.
That's
but
okay.
I think there is...
Take a day or two. Go to the retreat.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, I'll go to the retreat. That's fine. Okay, so let's just finish up here. Well, look at that. There's the S&P testing 1257.
I've been trying to get your attention, and you wouldn't listen. Yeah.
No. I know. All right, well, here
did,
I am. I'm back.
What did it get within? One tick of 57?
The high is 56.75.
Yep, sure enough.
It took one extra hour, you know, technically. It took one extra hour to...
Okay, now, what does that do to your whole outlook based on the fact that it took an extra hour? Anything? Does it change anything?
No, it doesn't really change anything. The biggest thing for me that it changes is that had it done it in the 1 hour late, which was the previous hour, mm-hmm. I would have been more likely to maybe take action at 57. But
okay.
Now, and again, like I said before, and I said it early today, the bigger forces that are at work can, when they're there, when they're present, and they certainly are present right now, they can play around with the smaller forces like the hourly and delay and push that around a little bit. And then when the larger forces are not really there. They're sort of quiet. They're just resting before their next big cycle starts up. The hourly and the shorter term charts that we do these roadmaps on are perfect, you know, plus or minus 1 unit at a time, time and time and time again. We've demonstrated it 100 times on your program, but in this particular case. So now, if we have the guy, what's his name, random walk down Wall Street guy come on the program, this is what I want to demonstrate for him. And I want to say to him, obviously, is that random? You know, we came in with prices $10 lower, and we said this is exactly what's going to happen, and it might happen a little bit late today because of larger forces at work, but it's going to go to 57. And it went to 57. I want to hear how he deals with that. I want to hear how a statistical mind, admittedly that he's trained and he's – what is he going to do with that? What's he going to say about that?
You know, I'm interested to hear what he has to say, because I've got to believe that he has what he believes to be a valid argument. He's in fact, he's not going to just stutter and stammer and go, well, gee, Mr. Williams,
well,
I don't know.
You're darn tootin', right? Exactly.
I'm going to scrap the book. I'm pulling it off the shelves. I was wrong. You're right. He's not going to do that. He's
Stop
got
the
an
presses.
Argument. He's got an argument, and I really would like to hear it. I truly would.
Yeah, I would too. But just be ready for disappointment because, you know, of the thing about statistics that we talked about.
Oh, okay. You got to hear this. Cliff goes, nowadays people want to enter the vineyard, eat their fill of grapes, sleep under the shade of the trees, and be awakened by someone else to jump up and cut in line to get the same pay that the harvesters got.
Right, exactly. That's what I'm saying. That's the part, exactly, that's well
great,
said.
Cliff. Oh.
I want people in society, including myself, to take responsibility for their own actions and stop blaming everyone else and stop worrying about what everyone else has got going on. Be responsible. Brighten the corner where you are. Work your program in life. And there are real inequities in life, save your bullets for those. You know, but isn't it interesting that that same, you know, the whole issue is in the Bible. There it is. Mm-hmm. You know, 2,000 plus years ago, nothing's really changed.
So you're saying there are some inequities in life?
I think there's inequities in law right now is what I'm addressing, that where you could say, hey, according to the rules that we're all supposed to play by, mm-hmm. you know, this is what happened, and I was done wrong, and that something like that happens. But your question about life being fair or not is a much deeper question, because fair doesn't revolve around necessarily law. It has to do with many other things that are just that occur naturally in life. And is that fair? A person's born with a disability. A person's born this way. A person has a car accident. All these things are
Yeah,
things
I know.
Fair?
It's huge. It is a huge
it's
thing.
It's a much different question.
When I travel to a third world country where, you know, conditions are, you know, terrible, and I stand there and I look at someone, and, you know, I don't say this out loud, but you can't help but think it. What did I do to deserve? Now, I grew up in a broken home. That's the label. My parents divorced when I was young. But you know what? I grew up in a house with indoor plumbing, with food in the refrigerator, and grandparents that love me, and parents that love me, and all of these things. And, you know, what did I do to deserve to grow up the way I grew up, as opposed to how this person standing in front of me had to grow up? And you know, you could have that same experience without going to a third world country. You could have that experience on Baseline Road with somebody that's lived here all their life. And you're right, David. It is. I mean, my easy answer is no, it's not fair, and nobody ever said it was going to be fair. You just have to play the hand you're dealt. And that's easy to say if you were dealt, you know, if you don't have all jokers in your hand, mm-hmm. right?
Uh-huh. Right.
So I don't disagree with you that it's a very deep subject, but I think once you probe it for as long as you can, at some point you end up back at the place where you go, I guess not. I mean, you might come up with a better way of saying it's not, but I don't see how you can ever get around the fact that it's not. If you do, I would love to be enlightened. I would love to hear. I would love to have that conversation with you, because I would like to view it differently. I would like to get a hold of it in a different level of understanding than what I currently have. Mm-hmm. I'm open to mm-hmm. that. I really am.
No, that's a very fair question, and no pun intended. It's fair.
Asking I didn't even catch
all
that.
Right. Oh, it's God. Another day, though. and I don't know that I have all the answers, but I sometimes know, and I just want to say this again, that You can struggle with a question for many, many years until you realize that it's an incorrect question. It's a false premise question. It actually starts from a point of falsehood and therefore can't be answered truthfully. So there are questions like that, and this may be one of them, and I want to think about whether or not it is one of them. It, to my best understanding, I'm not the final reference book on what the truth is, but I'd like to think about it before I answer it. So.
Okay.
But I am the final reference for the market getting up to 1257 today, aren't I?
Yeah, with a supporting cast. Good job.
With a supporting cast, right? All right, well, listen, it's been a pleasure. Tomorrow is Friday, so we still have one more day left in the week for some potentially important movement in markets that are turning on November 3rd, plus or minus a day. And, Dwayne, a pleasure to be on the program, as always. I'll plan on talking with you and the listeners tomorrow. Thanks for the questions. I always like answering questions and chatting with you about, you know, whatever the ideas are, questions that you have, or any other issues. So.
Oh, we have breaking news on MF Global. Missing money was accidental result of massive liquidation.
Okay. You know, that's meaningful. I just don't have the meaning.
Missing
just,
money
just
was
add meaning. Yeah, just add meaning.
Missing money was accidental result of massive liquidation. They actually scroll that across the screen.
No, I know. It's almost like something on a product box where it says, you know, shake two times, stir this, and just add water. You know, do this, do that, just add meaning, because I don't get any of that. I don't know what it is. Just all I have to do is add meaning to it.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to scoot along.
Okay.
And I'll see you tomorrow. Thank you very much, Dwayne. A pleasure being on the program.
Thanks.
And I'll see you tomorrow.
Bye-bye now.
Okay. Bye-bye.
I didn't notice what time it was. All I know is that I fell in love with you. And if all my dreams come true, I'll be spending time with you. Every day's a new day in love with you. With each day comes a new way of loving you.
All right, guys, that's going to be my cue to get on out of here, too. I got to go sit in the lotus position for a while and get ready for the partners meeting tonight. That's fun. I can only, if I could sit in a lotus position, that would be awesome. Not for the spiritual ramifications, but just to be that flexible again. Okay. You young guys in the audience don't get it. Trust me, 20 years, you'll get it. You'll get it. All right, we watched the market go up, hit the 56-57 zone. We got the reaction off of it. Okay, we dropped back right back down to, we missed it by a tick, the 57. But we did get into the zone, the 56-57. And we came right back to the, I mean, that's our deal. That's what becoming a partner is all about, you know. We show you this, we give you the indicators to do it with, and then you get to hang out with us for 3 months in a live trading room, and then you own the indicators for life. So, how many of these trades does it take to pay for your partnership? I don't know. That's, you know, it's a question only you can resolve. Let's see what happened here. We got to the zone. We have 56. We sold off to, what is this, 53? Yeah, 53. So, you know, I mean, there's a little more, but just call it 3 points. There's an immediate 3-point drop. Now, here's what I'm really interested in, and I won't be here to walk you through this, but I'll leave the chart running for those of you that do want to watch it. Maybe I will be here. That thing just jumped up there. Okay, it pulled back. Now, this is not the first pullback. Okay, this was the first pullback. This is a secondary pullback. Okay, the first pullback pushed us right into the zone. The secondary pullback, okay, our window of opportunity is right here. Okay, now on this one, it was right there, but we got through it. Okay, we got on the other side of the MA1, made the run. And we're going to struggle here. You see how this thing ran up and then closed back right under the MA1? Okay, you hear us on the recap talking about the window of opportunity or in the live trading room. There's the window. Okay. How often is the window good for a trade? Pretty often. If you haven't taken a free trial, come watch live in real time. If you've already taken the free trial, then, you know, send an email, become a partner. Now, what I'm interested in is first test rejected, okay? But we hit this right here, BBC, that we expect it to bounce. What did it do? It bounced. So, let me try to say this in plain English. It hit 56, came back 3 points to the BBC, where we would expect it to potentially bounce. It did for 3 points, okay? But now, what's it going to do? Is it ultimately going to get above 57? See, remember I said that for it to not get back into the weekly, inside the weekly trading zones and close out the week inside would be really unusual. And it has happened that we closed outside the zones. And this week, because we went so far outside, it would have certainly been believable that we not. And we're still outside, quite frankly. We've got to be above 57 at close of business tomorrow to consider that we're back inside the zones. Although that really doesn't have any meaning, because the fact that we close inside of the zones, that's not like it's another notch in my gun belt. It used to be, then I took that off the website, because it really, it wasn't a fact that made anybody any money that you closed inside of the zones. It was just kind of like a cool thing. But then once people started to kind of take the cool thing and make it into a big thing, I was like, you know what, I'm just going to take the thing away. So anyway, we'll see where we close tomorrow. But that's tomorrow. What about today? Okay. Good question. There's this. Okay. Cycle indicator. It's turned red. It's falling. Got a blue envelope here. Okay. That's bullish. Oh, I should point this out, because this is pretty good. We pierced the blue envelope from the bottom. When that happens, we expect a 4 to 6 point move in the direction of the trend. If the envelope is blue, that's 4 to 6 points up. If the envelope is red, that's 4 to 6 points down. We don't use this to enter the trade, we use this to confirm the trade. Okay? So right here, we expect the market to move up 4 to 6 points. It moved a little more than that this time, 7 and change from here. From here. Where did it pierce? It pierced right there. Okay, see that right there where it pierces the bottom? Okay, this is on the 10,000 contract. We look for 4 to 6 point move. We got better than that. Okay. Now, we're being rejected from the zone right now. It looks like for the second time. So, at what point do I take action? Well, I'm not in a hurry to do anything. If this thing's going to get cooking on the downside, it's got plenty of room to cook, right? This is an hourly chart. The low was down at 12.15, 12.1375. See, this high here, we're up against that high, okay? And there's, it's 11.11, so we've got 19 minutes left in this hourly candle. Now we've got a blue MA1, okay? So this thing got on the other side, priced on the hourly. This is Globex. I know it says day session right there, but this is actually a Globex chart. Price got on the back side of the MA1 and just ran right up here. Pulled back to the MA1 and up here. So now we got this little double top thing going on. So is it going to break it or not break it? I know that it's easy to feel pressed to make a decision right here. Man, I got to get this trade on or I might miss it. Well, it depends on what you're trading and what you want to do. You could have had 3 points here, 3 points here. It looks like you maybe get another couple back this way if this follows through. What I'm more interested in seeing, I think, for myself, do we get a bearish cross? Do we really start to head back down. Is this truly a top? On the hourly, is this truly a double top? I'm going to keep an eye on the YM, because look what happened on the YM. We came up, we hit the lowest zone, came back, we didn't quite get to the BBC. All right, so that there's a little bit of bullishness there. All right, goes right up this time, moves right through that zone like it's not there, and then it pulls back to where? Isn't that a thing of beauty? It pulls right back to the zone and the BBC. Now, this is a buy for us, all right? From 955 up to 988, I don't know, 30-point trade. We trade that with a 20-point bracket. The window of opportunity would have taken us to right here, which would have made it 55 to 72. It wouldn't have been a full 20 points there. But I showed you yesterday on the recap how we took advantage of a trade in the live trading room yesterday where the window of opportunity wasn't quite 20. Now, it went on through there and traded higher to put in this double top. See that? Then it came back all the way to the BBC and ran all the way back up. So in one candle, we've seen a low of 960 and a high of 77. This one candle off the BBC has given you 17 points of opportunity. As it moves back to the top here. So, now, I gotta go, but let me just cover this one more time. We're below the zone on the ES. David is correct in his statement that the different markets, they do have different dynamics, but for those who are partners and who follow the zones, you know that these two are going to correlate at some point. Either the ES is going to get above this zone and join the Dow, or the Dow is going to fail and get back below to join the ES. That's just the way it goes. So, that's why I'm not in a rush to do anything. Because, to use a term, there's some divergence going on, right? We're below resistance on the ES. We're above support on the YM. So was there an easy trade setup? Was there one of our textbook setups here? Yeah, right here. This was, in fact, the first pullback all the way to the BBC. This one didn't quite make it all the way back. Did I take it? No, I didn't. I was talking to you guys and talking to David. So I'll watch the two, and we'll see who ends up. You know, like again, I'll say this: either the ES gets above 57 and holds, or the YM gets back below 950 and holds. And when they're both on the same side of the table, that's when I'll decide what I'm going to trade, how I'm going to trade it, and what direction I'm going to look to trade it in. So I hope that helps. That's going to do it for today. Thanks so much for tuning in. Whoever you are, wherever you are, may God continue to richly bless you with His mercy and with His grace. And I'll see you at the bell.
Remember this, there is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Dwayne Reeves, his co-hosts, and guests. To learn more about trading e-mini futures or to take a one-week free trial in our live trading room, call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decision.